You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras American League Central. It is Matt Wehmeyer alongside Jeff Nelson. As today, we'll talk about all five teams in the AL Central with each team's beat reporter as we get their take on the overall vibe and attitude as they're in spring training, and also talk about the individual storylines that will shape their season heading into the 2015 campaign. We're joined on the phone by Jason Beck, MLB.com Tigers reporter, as Jason joins us from Tiger Spring Training in Florida. Jason, thanks for joining us. And just to start things off, talk about the overall attitude and the feeling of the four-time defending AL Central champions.
It seems pretty normal for spring training. You know, there's kind of the countdown on Victor Martinez and Miguel Cabrera, and it's a little bit of a new mix in the clubhouse without Torii Hunter around. But all in all, it seems to be going pretty well. You know, they've gotten some good responses on Jose Iglesias coming back from his injury, and Joe Nathan seems to be on a good track, as well as Justin Verlander.
Jason, talk a little bit about the middle of that lineup and Miguel Cabrera and also Victor Martinez. How is their progression during spring training? When do they expect them back?
Well, Cabrera just started swinging on the batting practice outside on Monday. And so that was kind of a good sign. It was on schedule, maybe even a little bit ahead. He's still running on an anti-gravity treadmill. Not really with a firm idea yet on a timetable for him to come back for games. You know, it seems like the target is early to mid-April. They're not ruling out opening day, but they're not giving really a whole lot of assurance on that. So you kind of get the sense you're aiming more for that general vicinity, and that if he isn't ready right on opening day, it shouldn't be a big deal, that they can deal with that and be able to fill the void. I think they're more worried about having him back healthy and having him available for the summer and then the stretch run, rather than trying to rush him back and then putting him in the spot where he's risking re-injuring or aggravating anything. And Victor Martinez arrived at camp on a full-time basis on Monday, having done some of his physical therapy back at home. He should be on a little bit better track. He was swinging off the tee on Monday, not really doing live BP yet. But that shouldn't be too far behind. He also has been running off the anti-gravity treadmill. And with his injury, it's a little bit of an easier rehab. It's just a matter of getting him up to speed and seeing how many at-bats he needs to be where he wants in preparedness for spring training. I think with him, there's more of an expectation he should be ready for opening day.
And Jason, remaining with that theme, how does Jose Iglesias look? How is he feeling after missing the entire 2014 season with those shin injuries?
Well, he feels pretty good right now. He played on Monday. It was only one inning, but he's been doing rather okay between game action and live BP pretty well. I think the test that they're looking for is going to come as we move along in spring training and he starts playing day in and day out. And you kind of see how his legs hold up under the grind of daily action and how they hold up to, wearing spikes every day to play games. It's kind of an alternating between spikes and turf shoes and sneakers, depending on the activity and depending on how much he wants to push the rehab on the legs. But so far, all the signs are pretty good. He's got his foot speed under him, and he seems to be handling everything pretty well.
Jason, they acquire Cespedes in a Porcello deal. What's the vibe been around camp with his addition? How important is he going to be in that lineup without Victor Martinez and Cabrera being there in opening day?
Well, we'll see. You haven't really had a chance to really see much game action with him. And, I think he had some athleticism that they needed. They had it with Torii, but Torii is obviously older. The Cespedes, they're getting a guy in his prime, a guy who has really made an impression. I think if it's in any area, it's been with the legs. He's been running the bases very well. I think Brad Ausmus sees an opportunity to take advantage of that, as they go along and kind of use that base running alertness to maybe try to get an extra base or two in some situations, which could be good because, right now they're looking for him. Once everybody gets back, they're looking for him to kind of bat maybe fifth or sixth in the lineup. So, if he gets on, you're talking about a situation where you might take advantage of his speed to try to manufacture some runs with the bottom third of the lineup due up.
Jason, want to get your take on Justin Verlander, very much a down 2014, the ERA over 4.5. In your eyes, was this an aberration for Verlander or perhaps the start of a downward decline?
I think time will tell. I think we have to see what kind of stuff he's got here in game action. And we won't know that until this coming weekend when he starts pitching in actual games. MVP has looked good. He's been able to get some velocity seemingly on the pitches without a whole ton of effort. But as anybody will tell you, there's a difference between being able to do that in live BP and then carrying that into games and getting the reactions from hitters who are trying to do something other than track pitches. That should be an interesting test. It's going to be something I'm going to be following. And I think Verlander will be following it too, because it's really going to be based off of those early outings where he's expected to decide, how much he can rely on that fastball and, what kind of mix he's going to need on secondary pitches to be effective going into the season.
Well, we'll stay in that rotation. You're going to have David Price for a full year, but you're without Scherzer and without Porcello, but you do get Simon and also Shane Green from the Yankees. Give me your take on that rotation.
Well, they're going to need a productive Verlander. They're going to need a productive, healthy Sanchez. I think spring training is going to be huge on that. Because remembering back to last spring, Sanchez had some outings washed out and had some others cut short while he dealt with a little shoulder issue. The injuries that bothered him during the season weren't really arm-related. He had a blister on one of his fingers that burst and cost him to miss a little bit of time. And he had the pectoral muscle injury in August that cost him dearly heading into September and really limited him to bullpen work during the postseason. I think that's having him back in a full capacity would be huge for this rotation. And they also think they have to get something out of Alfredo Simon. This is a huge season for Simon regardless because it's a contract year. And, if he hits free agency, he's going to be hitting it, amidst a cluttered market for starting pitchers unless a bunch of guys sign extensions this spring. So he's got to be able to back up what he was able to do during the first half last season and show that the second half numbers were more of an aberration. I think that's going to be big for him. And I think, but more than anything, the big three need to pitch like the big three. I think there's more confidence in Price than anybody else. But you also got to get rebound from Verlander and a healthy season from Sanchez in that regard.
Jason, of course, a constant source of angst for the Tigers and their fans in recent years especially has been the bullpen. You touched on Joe Nathan a little bit already. They recently brought back Jabba Chamberlain. They've got Joaquin Soria in the mix now for presumably the entire 2015 season. But in your eyes, did they do enough to address the needs in that bullpen this offseason?
They have to see what they have in Jabba Chamberlain. I think he's going to be a big swing guy. I think if you get him back effective like he was in the first half, it gives Ausmus, a little more flexibility on how he uses guys. I think Chamberlain wore down from a little bit of overuse as the season wore on, and I think that played a factor in the second half numbers. I think having, a guy like Soria established and healthy in that eighth inning setup role could be massive for these guys. But it also starts at the top, and I think Dave Dombrowski admitted this. They have to get Joe Nathan to be effective as a closer again. I think if you have him back in that back end role, then everything else kind of falls in line. And they have a lot of guys who have some experience pitching in setup in those seventh and eighth innings that they can lean on. but I also think there's a huge factor for them, maybe not necessarily right away, but certainly as the season rolls on, is going to be how Bruce Rondon responds. You know, he's that lights-out, overpowering reliever that other teams have had the last few years, and the Tigers haven't, because he had the elbow injuries and he had to recover from Tommy John last summer. And I think he was really, you know, his absence created a huge void for these guys in their bullpen the last two postseasons, where they haven't had that guy that they could rely on for a big out, that guy with that raw stuff who could do it. You know, he lost some development time, and the Tigers lost some time with him. So you know, they're going to be cautious with him. He's still a valuable young arm. We're going to see what he's got in games and kind of see how that elbow responds. He's got for sliders to be able to be effective along with that fastball, even if he's got the velocity back at full bore from the outset. But having him healthy for a full year is something the Tigers really haven't been able to take advantage of at all the last few years, dating back even when he was fashionable closer candidate a few years ago.
Jason, very few teams go into spring training with no open spots, and the Tigers could have been one of them if it wasn't for Martinez and Cabrera, if they're not going to be healthy for opening day. Who takes those roles? Who fills in at first base? Where do the Tigers go? And also a designated hitter. And are there any other surprises that we may see out of spring training, maybe breaking camp, any guys breaking camp?
Well, they have two tracks they can go on with first base. They're going to be using Alex Avila and some of the utility infielders at first to get them some time there. So Andrew Romine and Trinan Perez will get some time. So I think if you were looking at a situation where Cabrera was only going to be just a short time behind on opening day, that would be a way to lean. If you were looking at a little bit more time than that, then you might have to lean on minor league guys like Aaron Westlake and Jordan Leonardson. Both of those guys are natural first basemen. They just don't bring the same type bat. They've been able to accomplish something in minor leagues, but not anywhere near that same level as Cabrera Martinez. And they haven't played a day in the big leagues, so it would certainly be an adjustment period there. But I think that's something that they would have to live with. I don't think they would go on the open market to fill something there unless, Cabrera had suffered some sort of major setback and you would be looking at him maybe being out for like a month or more. Then maybe you might try to see who tries to get snuck along the waiver wire near the end of camp. Martinez, given the DH role, there's a little bit more flexibility there. They have a slugging prospect in Steven Moya that might be able to push aggressively and at least have a power presence in the lineup if Martinez, for some reason, wasn't ready. They have some other options there where they can fill in. But ideally, I think they're thinking more along the lines that Martinez has a better chance of being ready for opening day than Cabrera does.
Our thanks to Jason Beck, MLB.com Tigers reporter. We're joined on the phone by Jeffrey Flanagan, MLB.com Royals reporter, as Jeffrey joins us from Royal Spring Training. Thanks for joining us, Jeffrey. And just to start off, kind of talk about the overall vibe and the attitude of this team that came one win away from winning it all in 2014.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of confidence in camp right now. There's, Ned Yost has talked often about there's probably a little bit more swagger to this team. This is a team, like you mentioned, came within one win of winning it all. They don't believe it was a fluke by any means. They beat some quality teams along the way, and they don't feel like they've finished any business here. They feel like they've got a lot of unfinished business. They want to get back to the World Series, and they want to win it all now that they've got a taste of it.
Now, talk about that a little bit. I played with the Yankees, and we've gone to the World Series quite a few times, and one key thing that Joe Torre did, he made us not be content, not be satisfied with last year. Right. How does Ned Yost portray that to the players? Hey, don't be satisfied with what you did last year. You look at this division, Chicago got better. You have Detroit. Cleveland's going to be tough. Even Minnesota, the Twins in the rotation. How do they stay how do they keep from being content and just going with the flow?
Yeah, Ned Ed gets kind of testy about that because we've asked him that probably 9 or 10 times this spring, whether they're going to be complacent or not. And he insists, no, this is not that type of group. He brings up the point that you should have seen their faces 5 minutes after they lost game 7, and you wouldn't be asking that question. He thinks they're going to come back hungry, and they know the division's going to be tougher. They look at what the White Sox did. You know, the Tigers got better, too, to some degree, and the Indians have always given them trouble through the years, and Minnesota got better. They know that there's a lot of work ahead for them. So I don't think they're going to fall back on their laurels. They don't feel like they've really won anything. They feel like, you've got to win it all before you can make that claim, and they just don't feel like they're there yet.
Jeffrey, of course, a gaping hole at the top of that rotation. James Shields departing for the Padres via free agency. Will Chris Metlin and Edinson Volquez be enough to make up for that?
I think they're hoping that Eddie Volquez will give them 190 to 200 innings. They're asking everybody really in that staff to get 200 innings. And, the big question mark really is, will Danny Duffy be able to do that? You know, he's been hurt often. He was hurt at the end of last year. He did throw 146 innings before he got hurt. They really need him to step up and get close to 200. One thing going for them is if they don't get to those goals, they've got probably an even deeper bullpen this year than they had last year with Luke Kochaver coming back from Tommy John surgery, and he's progressing very nicely. So, you know, it's possible they don't have to go 7 or 8 innings, and they can have plenty of depth in that bullpen and get them games. You also give the big three guys in the back of the bullpen a little bit more rest. So I don't think they're really sweating out the fact that James Shields is gone. They're going to miss his presence in the clubhouse, obviously. But in terms of on the mound, they think they can fill that gap.
Well, to stay with that bullpen, possibly the rotation, Brandon Finnegan, he had 7 games, exciting guy in the playoffs, and I saw him in college. Does he come to camp as a starter, or are they keeping him in the bullpen?
Well, that's the big question mark at camp. Really, the only big question mark at camp is, what do you do with that guy? He was so impressive last year down the stretch in September. He had a few hiccups in the postseason, but he's a quality left-hander. He's probably their best left-hander out of the bullpen, and that's the organizational question right now. What do you do with him? Do you send him back to Omaha or AA and stretch him out as a starter when the season comes, or does he stay in the bullpen as their top left-handed option? They say all the time they're in the win-now mode, and that would mean that he should be their top left-hander. It's hard to make a case that he's not one of their best 25 players who should break camp. But, you know, I get the organizational thinking, too. They want to take it slowly with him and stretch him out as a starter, because eventually that will be his role. But there's no openings in the rotation right now, and he helps the team win games. He could help the team win games right now, and I think that's part of Ned's thinking, too. But, you know, that's something we're going to follow all spring. You know, what are they going to do with Brandon Finnegan? He's pitched at the game's biggest stage and didn't get flustered, so, I mean, I think he'd be able and ready to fit right in come opening day if they make that decision.
And, Jeffrey, given the rather unpredictable, volatile nature of bullpens in this day and age especially, is it reasonable to expect another lights-out season from the likes of Kelvin Herrera, Wade Davis, and Greg Holland?
Well, I don't think you're going to get what they did last year. I think we're, you know, Wade Davis at a 1.00, and the other two guys were 1.4. But, you know, even Wade and Greg Holland have told me a couple times in camp already, even if they have some regression and they say they slip back to 1.5 or 1.8 or 2.0, I mean, that's probably still as good as you're going to get in baseball. They're young guys. They know how to pitch. I don't think there's going to be a big slip this year for them. I think they just have too much talent. And they should be better rested this year because there is going to be more depth in the bullpen. Ned probably won't have to turn them quite as often as he did, especially down the stretch when he was trying to win every single game to get into the playoffs. They should be a little bit more rested when it comes to September, and maybe that even helps their numbers a little bit more.
Well, you mentioned resting the big three in that bullpen. I want to get back to the rotation real quick. Also, Ventura, you know, this guy's in his early 20s, and he had 180-plus innings last year, possibly going over 200. Is there a concern with the Royals that, hey, we have to watch him as well?
I don't think so. I think really he's a kid who's getting stronger every year. He's been tutored by James Shields the last year and a half. They feel like he's a horse, that he's not some skinny little kid anymore. He's really filled out pretty nicely. And Getting 200 innings out of him, I don't think will be a big problem. I think he steps right into the ace position in the rotation. I think the bigger concern, like I mentioned before, is Danny Duffy, who's been a little bit more fragile throughout his career. You know, he's 2 years removed from Tommy John surgery. He had some problems last year with his rib, a little bit with his shoulder, and wasn't a big factor down the stretch, was hardly any factor at all in the postseason. And he's going to have to step up and give them, you know, a lot of quality innings this year. Guthrie is probably going to be the five starter. He soaked up a lot of innings last year. He's always in great shape. He stays off the DL. So they'll get those numbers out of him probably. But I don't think there's really any concern about holding Yordano back. They feel like he's a young kid and they can just unleash him.
Jeffrey, the Royals losing Nori Aoki and Billy Butler in the offseason, replacing them in essence are Alex Rios and Kendrys Morales. Do you feel the club sufficiently addressed those needs given what they lost?
Yeah, I think the overall feeling is that they've upgraded at both positions. You know, Billy did not have a typical Billy Butler year last year, neither did Morales for that matter. But Kendrys often points to the fact that he missed spring training last year, and that really upset his timing. And now he's got a full spring training to work with, a full spring. They're hoping if he can get anywhere near the numbers he did 2 years ago for Seattle when he hit 23 homers and I think 80 RBIs, they'd be really, really happy with that. Alex Rios, another guy who's a bounce back candidate, was hurt much of last year. I think people kind of forget that he was leading the league in hitting last June before all the injuries set in. So they're looking for a healthy year out of him. He's got a 1 year deal. He should be motivated. He's also going to be a guy that they can leave in right field throughout the whole game. They don't have to do the defensive shift and replacement that they did for Nori last year. So they're hoping for, you know, a decent season out of him too. So they feel like they've possibly upgraded at both spots and their offense, which was kind of a sore point for most of the year last year, will hopefully be better in their minds.
Jeff, you look at the corner spots in the infield, Hosmer at first, Moustakas at third, both power shots, power positions. A lot of power out of that. Moustakas struggled at times last year, had a good postseason. And Hosmer, only 9 home runs. What are they doing? What do the Royals expect out of them coming into camp and heading into 2015?
Well, that's the big question, too. They both had, you know, superb Octobers. Hosmer was even better. And can they carry that confidence over, that swagger over from October into the regular season? With Hosmer, I think they were just waiting for him to have a breakthrough season. He had injuries last year, too, which kept his numbers down. But when he came back in September and October, he was just lights out. I mean, he carried the team offensively for a while. Moose is a little different situation. He got demoted in the middle of the season last year. He really has struggled once. You know, the Tigers on opening day last year threw the shift at him for the first time in his career, and he was just startled, didn't really know how to handle it, kept trying to hit through it, into it. In the postseason, of course, he decided to hit over it, and had 5 home runs, which is franchise record. But that's going to be one of the things that Moose is going to have to work on this spring is learn how to bunt a little bit more, learn how to push the ball the other way, find the open spots in that shift, and try to force defenses out of that shift so he can go back to being what he's more comfortable with, and that's being just a dead pull hitter. But it's a big year for Moose, pretty big year for Haas, too. They need both of those young guys to really step up and you know, be good at this point in their careers.
Our thanks to Jeffrey Flanagan, MLB.com Royals reporter. We're joined on the phone by Jordan Bastian, MLB.com Indians reporter. Jordan, thanks for joining us. And just to start off, talk about kind of the overall vibe and attitude of this Indians team as they get set for the 2015 season.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is a team right now that kind of feels like, you know, it got really close to what it wanted to accomplish last year, which was, you know, a second consecutive trip to the playoffs, but kind of left wanting more, obviously, because they took it to the final weekend of the regular season, despite a lot of injuries, despite a lot of issues with guys underperforming, and they still came really close to reaching October again. So, you know, this is a club that kind of comes back virtually intact. They added a couple guys, Gavin Floyd for the rotation, Brandon Moss for the lineup, and some other players to kind of fill in some gaps around the edges. But mostly it's the same team that they had last year, so they're counting on a lot of comeback seasons from guys like Jason Kipnis, Nick Swisher, Michael Bourne, you know, a lot of these guys who are key figures and some of the higher salary guys on the roster, expected to be playing a big role again this season. So I'd say it's been a good couple of weeks here so far. There's been an aggressive pace, as you'd like to expect in the early portion of the camp. But, you know, with the defensive issues they had last year, one of the goals early on in the workout stage was to do things more at a game-like pace, kind of simulate things at a faster speed. So when they did transition towards the games, you know, maybe the reaction speed was a little more improved for some of these players. So far that's been the overall vibe and kind of the goals and themes so far. You know, now that we're starting to get into games, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out on the field.
You mentioned the offense and the addition of Brandon Moss. In your opinion, you know, you bringing in a guy that can play first base and also right field, a 20-plus home run guy, 80 RBI guy with the A's, is that enough? Is that enough for them to, you know, contend? Because the Central Division has definitely gotten stronger with what the White Sox have done and also, you know, obviously the Tigers.
Yeah, I think one of the big things this year will be if they can get Jason Kipnis back to the type of player, an offensive weapon he was in 2013, that would be huge because he really wasn't the same last year after his oblique injury. Michael Bourne, you know, if he can get back to some of the production that, you know, we were used to seeing over the course of his career. And then obviously the Indians are pretty thrilled with kind of the internal development of, you know, young core guys like Michael Brantley, who finished third in the MVP race, Carlos Santana, who had 100-plus walks and led the team in home runs last year. So they like the offensive potential of their team, and now especially adding a guy like Moss, who moving from Oakland to Cleveland, you know, I mean, he could stand to see a increase in his power production just by switching ballparks. Progressive Field much favors left-handed hitters much more than the Coliseum out in Oakland. You know, and his slugging percentage on the road over the last 3 years, I think, is something like .544. So, you know, it kind of shows what he can do outside of Oakland, and they're hoping if that hip is right, and so far this spring he looks good, that he can kind of add that pop and that protection for Santana in the heart of the lineup. And it also gives them kind of that built-in contingency plan if Nick Swisher isn't ready to go by opening day, because he's also coming back from double knee surgery. And, you know, maybe Moss can give you more production than even what the Indians thought they would get out of Swisher. So, yeah, I think they like I said, that nucleus of guys they have returning, and they feel that adding Moss into the thick of that lineup right in the middle can produce a little more power on a consistent basis, which is a problem at times last season.
Jordan, you mentioned Michael Brantley. It seems like this guy is baseball's best-kept secret, as you said, third of the MVP vote in 2014. Could he even improve on his 2014 numbers? And do you agree that he is baseball's perhaps most underrated player?
Yeah, you know, he's got to be up there when you're talking about kind of that quiet, underrated superstar, because he is really emerging here. It's been a steady rise over the last few years. He comes from obviously some great pedigree there with his dad, former big leaguer Mickey Brantley. You know, so he's got that family tie. He's been around baseball his whole life, and this is a kid who just every year you look at his stats, he's getting better. It'd be harder to get better than he was last year. It's the first time ever in Indians history, a team that goes back since 1901, that a guy had 20 homers, 40 doubles, 20 steals to go along with 200 hits. I mean, it was a pretty remarkable season for Michael Brantley, and I think we were all pretty encouraged, those of us who got to watch him on a daily basis, to see that, you know, he did get that national recognition to finish as high as he did the MVP voting. So I think what they've got there is a guy who's going to bring consistency. He's got one of the highest contact rates in baseball, so you know he's going to put the ball in play. And he's made some strides over the last couple of years to add more power to his game, which is, you know, it's kind of scary to see, you know, a guy with that talent to improve as much as he has. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do to build on last year. But they really like him in that third spot of the lineup and kind of being that focal point of this offense.
Jordan, let's go into that rotation. It's always about the pitching. The offense can do whatever, but it's up to that starting pitching. Corey Kluber, last year's Cy Young Award winner, outstanding year. What can we expect from the rest of the rotation? You have very young rotation, Bauer coming back, and Salazar. What can we expect by those two young guys?
I mean, this is like the rotation that the sabermetric crowd just is drooling over right now. You know, it's really highly rated. With a lot of potential, especially given what they did in the second half last year. Obviously, much like Brantley, Kluber is kind of cut from that same mold of He's really quiet, doesn't really look for the attention. And, you know, I think had he not won the Cy Young, we'd be sitting here having that same question. Is he one of the more underrated pitchers? And he still might be, even with that award. So, you know, he'll lead the way. They got Carlos Carrasco, who over the last 2 months of the season had something like a 1.7 ERA. His last 10 starts, he had a 1.3 ERA and was arguably the best pitcher in baseball over those last 2 months, other than Corey Kluber. You know, so there's a lot of promise there. You know, he made a lot of strides, and they feel he can be a legitimate number two arm. They brought in Gavin Floyd, as I mentioned before, to kind of provide some another layer of depth and a veteran presence coming back from an elbow injury. And then they've got some young guys, as you mentioned, Trevor Bauer, you know, really had his first prolonged stint in the big leagues. Inconsistent showing, but, you know, really spent the offseason working hard on developing a two-seamer a little differently, a splitter. And he's a really analytical kid. So he spent a lot of time analyzing and poring over his major league sample. It'll be interesting what he can do. And then Danny Salazar, TJ House are two of the guys that round out the staff in the competition for that fifth spot, which will also have Zach McAllister and Josh Tomlin in the mix. It's a really intriguing group. There's obviously question marks at each and every slot in that rotation, but the potential is definitely there to be one of the best staffs in the major leagues, which they were in the second half last season.
And Jordan, just to elaborate on Corey Kluber a little bit more, as you said, you know, had he not won the Cy Young, we'd be talking about him as one of the more underrated pitchers in all of baseball. But now that he did get that award and the recognition that goes with it, does he kind of carry himself as the guy, as the ace of the staff? And is his attitude sort of, you know, get on my back and I can carry you guys?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we saw kind of hints of that in the past, but you know, it's, he hadn't kind of climbed that rotational ladder at the time. Justin Masterson was still here and was looked at as the rotation leader. You could kind of always see that work ethic and drive that Corey had, and it really blossomed last year. 2 years ago, he was on the cusp of doing something special too, and then he had a finger injury, which really got in the way of his year. So when you talk to Francona and Mickey Callaway, the pitching coach, and some of the people around the Indians about, you know, when they kind of saw this emergence, you know, they'll point to 2013, you know, as seeing when he started to really start to break through. This is a guy that made some significant changes to his pitch repertoire in 2011 when he was in the minor leagues, adding the cutter, you know, really adding the two-seamer. And so the pitcher that you're seeing now in the major league stage is kind of not the same pitcher style-wise that he was when he was a prospect coming up with the Padres in his early years after being traded to Cleveland. And it's been really interesting. He's 28. I think he'll be 29 this year, and he's not eligible for arbitration till next winter. So the Indians kind of got this guy who's hitting his prime, you know, is on top of his game, and he's under control for four more years before you even start thinking about, you know, free agency. So it's been pretty special, and, yeah, definitely you can see the confidence growing and just kind of him embracing that kind of quiet leadership role, a guy that likes to lead by example in terms of his work ethic and his production rather than being one of the, you know, rah-rah outspoken guys in the clubhouse.
Well, Jordan, you had that rotation and you only had one guy go over 200 innings, and the next closest guy was Trevor Bauer. So how concerned is Terry Francona with their bullpen? You had Cody Allen, your closer, had an outstanding year, 76 appearances, and three other guys in that bullpen had 70-plus, and Brian Shaw had 80. How concerned is Terry Francona to try to limit some of those outings and not burn these guys out?
Yeah, I think that's something he's really cognizant of. You know, we all like to joke around with him that, you know, if he could have his way, he'd have like a 10 or 11 or 12-man bullpen. And, you know, the relievers obviously know, you know, kind of the history there. They're the first team in American League history to have four pitchers with 70-plus games. And, you know, they set the record for in the American League for combined relief appearances last year for a team in 1 year. So, you know, obviously a lot of usage there, especially when you look at Brian Shaw, the setup guy, and Cody Allen, now the closer, two of the most used arms over the last two seasons. In terms of combined appearances and combined pitches and combined innings. So one thing the Indians try to do is they try to really monitor the usage of these guys in between their outings, and also they're really aware of when they get a guy up in the bullpen, you know, to try and get him in that game. They don't like to have guys getting up and down throughout a game without getting in because they obviously know the wear and tear that can take, you know, on guys' arms. But you talk to each of these relievers individually, and obviously none of them are going to come out and say, yeah, we're being overused or we're fatigued. But they say that they've really appreciated how this coaching staff has handled not just the game usage, but the way they've approached the work in between outings and on the side and things like that. Things, steps that they've taken that you can't see in a box score that have really helped keep these guys fresh. And, you know, Francona likes to have that eight-man bullpen a lot of times, so that helps too, you know, to kind of, you know, the appearances are high, but he's got that extra arm there that a lot of teams don't to kind of alleviate some of that load. So I think the hope here is that some of these rotation guys, now that they've earned these roles and earned more experience, can climb higher in terms of the total innings. You know, maybe Carrasco can be an 180, 208 arm. You know, Bauer and those guys, maybe they can follow suit. Maybe Floyd, who was an innings eater in the past with the White Sox, can come back and do the same again. And maybe that'll help take off some pressure. But that's something that Francona and Callaway and bullpen coach Jason Bray are all very aware of as they're heading into the season.
Our thanks to Jordan Bastian, MLB.com Indians reporter. We are joined on the phone by MLB.com White Sox reporter Scott Merkin as he comes to us from White Sox spring training. Scott, thanks for joining us. Just want to start off by having you discuss what the general vibe and attitude is right now with this revamped White Sox team heading into 2015.
Well, even with Chris Sale's minor mishap recently, it's you know, very upbeat. The team really feels like they have a chance to win this year. It's an important season for them. They kind of sped up the, you know, reshaping process with about eight off-season impact moves and really put themselves in contention for the AL Central. And they believe, you know, at the very least they can win the division. I think at the most they believe they can win it all this year. They've really kind of addressed every need that they had and upgraded everything.
Scott, I think we have to talk about that a little bit more. You know, there's always freak injuries, whether somebody falling right in the tub, down the stairs. Chris Sale jumps off a truck, and you just mentioned all the moves that the White Sox have made for them to contend in that Central Division. How long is he going to be out? And me as a pitcher, knowing, okay, a starter needs a lot of time, especially spring training. This is one of the reasons why spring training is so long. When do you see him back at the earliest? I'm thinking possibly middle of April, maybe even beginning of May.
Yeah, I'm not sure about beginning of May, but I think you're on the mark with, you know, the April possibility. Let's put it this way. They're certainly not going to rush him at all. It's going to be, you know, 100% health before he gets on the mound, because you don't want anything else to happen where maybe you're compensating for your foot not feeling as, you know, as great as it possibly can and you hurt something else. I think that might have happened a little bit with Nate Jones last year, where he had, you know, the hip problem and the back problem. And, you know, I mean, it could be, you know, just two separate, you know, different injuries for him, but kind of led to trying to find a new landing point and maybe hurt the elbow in the process. But, you know, I think Sale is going to be, you know, when he's out there, they want to have him for the rest of the season. So they don't need five starters really until April 21st moving forward. It's really just two starts because of the three off days. And, you know, you're probably going to have other rearrangements with them playing in the AL Central almost that entire month. So weather is going to probably play a part too. So, yeah, I think, you know, they're not ruling out opening day. They still have hope for him. They still have hope that by 3 weeks he'll be back doing baseball activities. And, you know, that still gives him 2 weeks left in spring training before the opening day start in Kansas City. But, again, if it means missing opening day and being back, you know, April 15th or April 22nd and being there the rest of the year and making 32 starts, then that's what they're going for. So there's it could be worse, or it could be worse, but, you know, it's not the worst situation they possibly could have. It's not what they hope for, is what I'm trying to say, obviously, and not what they plan for, but it could have been a lot worse, especially what they heard at first. They thought it could be, you know, something more serious.
Scott, after Chris Sale, let's talk about the rest of that rotation. You've got Jeff Samardzija and Jose Quintana as your 2 and 3, and then talk about how the rest of that rotation fills out from there.
Well, you know, it's pretty well set right now. You know, the only situation is who would, you know, temporarily take the spot for Chris Sale. But, it, you know, on healthy situation, it's Chris Sale, Jeff Samardzija, Jose Quintana, John Danks, and Hector Noesi. And, you know, they got a lot out of Hector Noesi last year after he was released by a couple teams. And, you know, they put him in that number five spot last year, and he did pretty well. And they're excited to have him for a full camp this year to work more on, you know, what they can. So Don Cooper has some plans to make him even more viable in that last spot. And John Danks has changed his arm slot a little bit. He's changed his leg kick a little bit. And he's just trying to, you know, do a little more, get a little more movement with a little loss of velocity from that shoulder injury. Now, he was never a real hard thrower to begin with. But after the shoulder surgery in 2012, he's a different style of pitcher now. And this is a couple years removed now. You know, it's pretty much behind him. Now it's just pitching again. And, you know, he's a pretty solid pitcher when healthy. So it's a pretty good starting rotation. It matches up, I think, very well against the rest of the AL Central. You know, I mean, you can put those first three when healthy against pretty much any first three in baseball and come out pretty even, if not ahead.
And, Scott, how excited are the White Sox to have David Robertson in the back end of their bullpen in the ninth inning?
Well, I mean, it's a key thing because last year, I think, you know, the bullpen was not good last year, and the numbers prove that it was not a strong bullpen. But there were some good pitchers in that bullpen. And I think because of injuries to Nate Jones, because of an injury to Matt Lindstrom that cost him a bunch of time, there were guys who were out of position in terms of where they align late in the game. And, you know, Jeff, you know how it goes with the bullpen. You got to have the right fit in the right inning, not just all good pitchers down there. It's got to kind of work as a almost a conveyor belt, you know, one hand, or a relay race, one handing off to the next. Well, now you have the guy in the ninth inning for the next 4 years, so you know you're set there. You're confident that you have one of the better closers. You know, you paid the money to get him to go after that ninth inning, and now you have guys like Zach Duke and Dan Jennings and Jake Patricia and Javi Guerra and Zach Putnam who all fit in before then, and maybe even Carlos Rodon before all is said and done in the bullpen also. So, you know, it's you have a good starting staff, and you hate to waste great starts with a late inning loss, and they feel like they've answered that problem from last year with a number of upgrades in the back end of the bullpen.
Scott, when you take a look at the offense, first base in particular, Jose Abreu coming off his Rookie of the Year campaign in 2014, the first baseman. They also bring in Adam LaRocha, the longtime career first baseman. How do you see that kind of shaking out between the two of them?
Well, Adam LaRocha is, you know, going to play right now. I mean, it's so hard to say because they haven't really even played a Cactus League inning yet, so it's hard to say what the exact alignment's going to be, but I think Abreu played about 103 games at first base last year, and I would think that total is probably a good rough number to look at. You know, LaRocha is a great defensive first baseman. He's a Gold Glove winner, so you feel comfortable putting him out there, but he's also a guy who, you know, is ready to DH, and I think it's going to split even. They both seem to have a real good attitude about, you know, splitting that time with first base and DH. And Rick Hahn talked about talking to Abreu in the offseason when they were going to get LaRocha. And he was excited about it. He was ready to bring him in. And he actually said to him at the end of the conversation, okay, now what are we going to do about the pitching? So he's looking at, you know, team first all the way.
Will you guys go out and sign Melky Cabrera? What's that mean for that lineup?
Well, again, that seems to be the ones that people point to as the biggest surprise of the additions, because it sounded like that, you know, they were kind of at their budget limit or what they had set for spending, and then they came up and got him too with a 3-year deal of $42 million, I believe. So now you have a number two hitter, and really you just have a good hitter. Forget about number two. He fits in that lineup as a switch hitter and a solid left fielder in that second spot. But if you want to, let's say, go a different lineup, you want to use Emilio Bonifacio and go with the speed, you know, top of the order with Eaton and Bonifacio, Cabrera certainly can hit, you know, fifth or sixth or lower in the order. So it's just another good offensive weapon. And now, you know, they still have guys who can clear the fences. They still have home run hitters, which you need at U.S. Cellular Field. But they also can beat you in other ways. You know, they have the speed factor more than I can remember in a long time on this roster.
Scott, you mentioned Emilio Bonifacio moments ago. He's in the mix for that second base battle. Who do you think gets the starting nod when all is said and done?
If I had to guess right now, and again, I'm going back to the, you know, early in spring training stage, but if I had to guess right now, I think Micah Johnson has a slight edge. You know, he's probably not as far along defensively as some of the other candidates, certainly not, you know, Gordon Beckham, who, you know, even with his offensive struggles over the years, up and down offensive performance, he was always one of the better defensive second basemen in the league. So you have him, you have Bonifacio, and Carlos Sanchez, who played pretty well during his September call-up last year, and I think is a little ahead of Micah defensively, but Micah can really be a dynamic weapon offensively and has worked hard on his defense. You know, Robin Ventura talked about that today, as a matter of fact, that he's put in a lot of time with third base coach Joe McEwing on the defense. So I think it's better for the White Sox overall if either Micah or Carlos starts at second base, because then you can use Bonifacio and Beckham all over the baseball diamond, really, with Bonifacio. You know, he plays second, short, third, in every outfield position, and Beckham across the infield. So I think that's the best situation for him if one of the rookies takes second base, and then you have the other guys as kind of super sub material.
Any other surprises possibly in spring training as far as breaking camp? How about the catching situation?
No, I mean, I think, you know, Tyler Flowers is the starter going into the season. He will be the starter opening day. And, you know, they have some good veteran options. Now they have some depth there, which they didn't always have before. Giovanni Soto's lost some weight and, you know, in the offseason is in good shape coming into camp. He's a guy who, along the way, if he breaks camp with the White Sox, could challenge Flowers for more playing time, but Flowers is a very confident kid that the pitchers like throwing to him. So, you know, I think he's got the starting job, and it's a question of whether it's Soto, or you also have George Contreras back there, Adrian Nieto, Rob Brantley. There's some options there. But really, there shouldn't be that many surprises, because with all the moves they made, they kind of, you know, set a lot of spots there. I guess the biggest question is what's going to happen with Carlos Rodon, who's their, you know, dynamic number one pick from last year, rated by MLB.com as a number 14 prospect overall. He's going to fill in for Sale in the Cactus League rotation, and the question is, does he break camp with the team as possibly, you know, the spot starter for those two spots, and then maybe falls back into the bullpen once Sale returns? Or do they have him start in the minors where he gets regular starts, you know, for AAA Charlotte or AA Birmingham? So I think, you know, who wins second base and what happens with Carlos Rodon are the two biggest questions to look at as spring training, as Cactus League play begins Wednesday against the Dodgers.
Our thanks to Scott Merkin, MLB.com White Sox reporter. And we are joined on the phone by MLB.com Twins reporter Rhett Bollinger, who comes to us from Twins spring training. Rhett, thanks for joining us. And let's just start off the discussion by having you talk about kind of the overall vibe and attitude around Twins camp going into the 2015 season.
Well, I think there's more optimism this year. Talking to Joe Mauer earlier this week, he was saying that he senses optimism, obviously a new coaching staff, a new manager in Paul Molitor, bringing in some guys like Torrey Hunter, a noted veteran, you know, has a lot of history with the Minnesota Twins. Bringing in Irvin Santana, which is a much-needed piece after the rotation. Tim Stocker, a nice bullpen piece. So I think they're kind of, you know, obviously last year some of those young rookies, guys like, you know, Vargas and Santana played pretty well. So I think there's a little bit more optimism heading into this year than in years past.
Well, the Central Division, the American League, could be one of the toughest divisions in baseball. You look at all the teams that are ahead of them. Minnesota finished in fifth place last year. Ron Gardenhire's been around forever. Now you just mentioned Molitor, the new guy, obviously Hall of Famer. What do you see him bringing to a team and turning the Twins around and becoming a contender possibly this year?
Well, he's definitely different than Gardenhire. He's definitely more, a little more calm and reserved. His demeanor's definitely different than kind of Gardenhire's more fiery. I don't know if we'll see, you know, Molitor getting out there in the animated discussions with umpires like Gardenhire did. But, yeah, I think this year might be more of a bridge to being competitive in that division, because, like you said, this division right now, big is so much tougher with the White Sox getting better. We know about the Tigers. We know how good the Royals were last year. The Indians are a very good team as well. So I think this year it's kind of getting the young guys, hopefully guys like Buxton and Snow up here at some point, Alex Meyer, and maybe build that competitive bridge to the next season.
Right, you touched on Torrey Hunter a little bit, returning to the Twins after spending the first 15 years of his career in Minnesota. Exactly what kind of a role do you see him having both on the field and in the clubhouse this season?
Well, the Twins still believe he can hit. So he's definitely going to be their starting right fielder. They believe he can bring some power into that lineup, maybe bat anywhere between fifth and seventh in that lineup. And then obviously off the field, he's a great clubhouse guy. I mean, this guy's been around the game for a long time. He's been kind of mentoring guys like Aaron Hicks and Byron Buxton all spring so far. Pretty much anywhere Hunter goes, they go. They're definitely listening. So in terms of being a clubhouse leader, that's going to be big too. And I think, like I said, offensively, he brings a lot. There's definitely a little bit more question marks about his defense in right field now that he's 39, turning 40. But the Twins still feel like he's still a, you know, positive both on and off the field.
Joe Mauer coming into this year, talk a little bit about his health. Had a down year average-wise and also injured. Had some concussion problems. Talk a little bit about how he feels going into this spring training and how he is going to turn things around and get back to that, you know, top hitter in the AL again.
Yeah, people forget that last year he was coming off that concussion, the end of his season. So kind of going into last season, he didn't even start workouts until late January. He kind of got a late start. Started off the season kind of slow and started to kind of pick it up, and then all of a sudden he suffered an oblique injury and ended up missing 40 days with that injury and kind of came back and started playing a little better. But by the end of the year, he only had four home runs and really had it down there all around. So I think this year he's had a full offseason of being healthy. He worked out with this noted stretch guru named Roger Erickson, who's kind of helped him with his oblique and that kind of thing to kind of keep him healthy for the season. So the Twins are definitely banking on him being, you know, an offensive, you know, threat this year. Last year they still finished seventh in the majors in runs scored, even with him having it down here. So I think the Twins are definitely very hopeful he can get it back together this season.
Rhett, when you look at the rotation, Phil Hughes signed that contract in the offseason coming off that record-breaking year, 11.6 strikeout-to-walk ratio, the best ever in baseball history. They bring in Irvin Santana, but beyond those two, a lot of question marks. How do you assess this rotation overall?
Yeah, you're right. There's definitely the top two guys there. And then Kyle Gibson's another guy they liked last year, you know, second year in the big leagues, kind of take a step forward. I think the Twins like to see him take even a bigger step forward this year. I think he'll be a part of that plan. And then Ricky Nolasco is a guy that, you know, obviously they paid a lot of money last year, signing him to a four-year deal, and he didn't really deliver. He was injured with an elbow injury and had an ERA above five. but the Twins are definitely hopefully he's going to bounce back. He's at camp now. He looks lighter and leaner. Twins are definitely hopefully kind of get back to that workhorse that he was. And that fifth spot's up for grabs. Tommy Malone's probably the favorite there. But another experienced guy, Mike Pelfrey, is in that mix. Tim Stafford is going to be in that mix, but probably more likely to be a reliever. And then young guys like Alex Meyer and Trevor May are going to get a chance too. So I think at this point it's probably Malone's to lose, but at least they finally have some rotation depth that they've been lacking in recent years.
Do you see the rotation? You look at Phil Hughes, the only guy going over 200 innings, and that really puts a lot of pressure on your bullpen. Last year, 15th in ERA, the Twins were in pitching. Where do you see that changing? Do we have some guys possibly getting over 200 innings, and how does that help out the bullpen, who really struggled as well?
Yeah, it's definitely true. I mean, over the last couple of years, the Twins have had a lot of trouble getting, you know, length and depth out of those relievers. Really not having too many guys go over 200 innings, I think. This year, though, I think Evan Santana, I think he's gone over 200 innings, or at least 30 starts, I think, in five of the last 7 years. So he's definitely kind of a workhorse type. And I think the Kyle Gibson almost got there last year, and I think now that he's, I mean, another year more of experience, I think he's got a good chance. And Alaska, you know, was definitely a durable guy that could get up to that, too, in the past. So I think there's definitely some optimism they could maybe, you know, kind of take that workload off the bullpen. But it's kind of a matter of some of these rotation guys starting to do it, because this rotation has definitely been the biggest problem for the team in the 4 years of struggles.
Right, when you look at this Minnesota Twins team, two of the guys that people really talk about are two guys who have not played a big league game with the Twins yet, of course, Miguel Sano and Byron Buxton. Talk about their presences in camp and what can be expected from them.
Well, obviously, both guys coming off big injuries. You know, Sano last year had the Tommy John surgery, so the third baseman didn't play at all. And then Buxton had a lot of injuries, from the wrist injury, suffering a concussion in the outfield, to breaking his finger in the Fall League. So he only played, I think, 31 minor league games plus the game from the Fall League. So I think this year, to kind of staying healthy is the big key for these two guys. We know about their talent. You know, Buxton's the number one overall prospect in the game, and Sano's not too far behind him. I think both the guys are going to be there in Double-A to start the year, but it's good for them to kind of get, you know, some experience now in big league camp. Like I mentioned earlier, Torrey Hunter's really been mentoring Buxton. Kind of Buxton's always following him around, asking him questions. So it's definitely a big part of this future for this team. And Terry Ryan's even indicated he thinks both guys have a real shot to be up you know, in the majors at some point this year. But probably more likely in September than anything.
Well, with the last place finish in the Central Division, a new manager in Paul Molitor, obviously getting to know his guys and always been in the organization in the past. What kind of surprises, anybody that we, you know, might hear of coming in the spring, maybe, you know, turning things around, or a guy that is off the radar that might make this team?
I think really the only guys that really have chances to kind of maybe surprise would be relievers. I think, you know, kind of around the infield, I think the backup infields are probably going to be Nunez and Escobar. I think Yandy Santana switching over to shortstop from center field. I think Hicks has probably got a good chance in center field. But the back end of the bullpen, we can see some surprises. The Rule 5 draft pick, Gianna Graham's a guy to maybe look out for. Twins always like try to protect guys if they can. Non-roster guy, Blaine Boyer, had a good year last year in San Diego. Stephen Pryor's another guy that got in the trade last year they like. So I think the back end of the bullpen's maybe the more likely spot we'd see some surprises, but I think overall, I think Mike Pelfrey might be in the bullpen too. That might be a little bit of a surprise. But other than that, I think position player-wise, I think we probably won't see any surprises.
That's Rhett Bollinger, MLB.com Twins reporter. For Jeff Nelson, I'm Matt Wehmeyer, thanking you for joining us for MLB.com Extras American League Central.